Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham and we are calling out the whistleblowers in association with AllFootballShirts.com. Yes, that's right, another cut and paste performance at West Brom last Saturday saw us continue to find new and more ridiculous ways of not scoring, much to the continued amusement of the football media. However, the goal-scoring problem is not really that funny, and it has left us looking nervously over our shoulders again. And by the time we kick off against Leicester this evening, Fulham could be level on points with us. That red light certainly spells danger. But joining me today as we try and make sense of all of this and more is, as ever, Alan Wares. And we are delighted to be joined by the interim Albion Under-23s management dream team of Andrew Crofts and Shannon Roof. Welcome to the show, guys. Firstly, Crofty, is it any possible you can go back into the first team and start taking penalties for us, please?
Hi, guys. Yeah, I never really took penalties, mate, so it probably wouldn't be me or any use to that one. But nice to be on the show, boys, and look forward to having a chat.
Great stuff. In your role, when you were, for instance, when you were Albion captain, and they weren't in times as sort of kind of as salubrious and you know, obviously Premier League as they are now, but you know, when you see the Albion playing how they are, in your position as captain, what else do you think you could do if you were out there to get us over the line in each individual instance?
Tough question, because obviously you don't know until you're on the pitch. Everyone, you know, it's easy for me to say not being involved in the action or the battle when you're on the grass. Watching it from a distance, and obviously a keen fan now when watching the first team, and really enjoying a lot of the stuff that the boys are doing. And you know, you're so close to having top performances finished off by more goals and obviously more wins. But easy said than done. Everyone knows how hard the Premier League is. As a captain, obviously, in the presence of Lewis Dunk, it'd be a tough one to follow now. If he was going back to the Albion and putting on the armband, because I don't think there's many better. He knows exactly what the club means. His performances for a long period of time have been of a high, high level, and his loyalty to the club is superb. So, I don't know if I could add to that, because I think he's, again, he's a real role model as a captain and someone who's leading by example week in, week out.
But Crofty, and you, Shannon, as well, I mean, when you see the profligacy in front of goal at the moment, which is, it's becoming, it, I mean, you could put some slapstick theme music behind it at the moment. It is ever so slightly worrying. So, I mean, how would you put that right on the grass?
It's a real tough one, because obviously every team wants to score as many goals as they can to win football games, and we've created so many chances. Obviously, everyone knows that in the last three games how many chances we've created, and obviously the goal scored to chances created ain't where you'd want it to be. But it's very easy to say, but sometimes just Lady Luck ain't looking down on you. And I think the amount of times you think that it's going to score and we've hit the post, hit the bar, some of the performances the keepers have made against us in of late as well, the Aston Villa game, but Martinez being man of the match. And sometimes it just doesn't happen for one reason or the other. But what the boys continue to do is just keep churning out very good performances and creating chances. And I'm sure really soon you'll see them chances converted a little bit more, and the results again look a lot positive. Albeit obviously take the last couple of games away, the boys were on a fantastic run and some unbelievable performances and results against top teams. It weren't long ago that you're really looking really positive, and that's the Premier League. One minute you think you're sort of making daylight and that gap's getting bigger, and then all of a sudden, a few weeks later, it becomes a little bit closer. But that's the quality of the Premier League. But I'm sure the lads have got so much quality in, and the first team staff, that the job they're doing is fantastic. And hopefully, you know, then we go on another run that we ain't been too long been on.
Yeah. Shannon, I'm going to ask the same question to you, but from a slightly different angle. Now, obviously, you're the interim under 23 coach, but you're also a goalkeeping coach at the club as well. Obviously, we're seeing these chances being created. And like as Crofty said there is, I mean, Emi Martinez, for instance, for Villa, it was a one man show. I mean, it was just amazing. So, I mean, when you look at that, I mean, do you ever speak to the strikers and say, right, OK, if you put it in this angle, it's somewhere where the keeper can't get it or vice versa?
Yeah, you know, no matter whether, you know, for our own goalkeepers or for our centre forwards, there is a lot of opposition analysis that goes into every game now, whether it be at under 23 level or Premier League level. And, you know, what teams will do when playing against us, you know, they'll try and work out the best way to stop us. And sometimes, you know, when you're playing that well and you create a chance that you create, it almost, you know, becomes a situation where teams try their absolute most to stop you scoring. And you know, you saw the Palace game, you know, and the West Brom game. These teams are defending for their lives. And that can almost make it harder when you're performing how we're performing. It probably gives teams even more belief and hunger to defend, which makes it harder. You know, we found ourselves, you know, in our Leicester fixture with the 23s, the stats were very much in our favour, but teams are hanging on for dear life, and that makes it harder too.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to move on from this in a second, but before we do, we have to ask the question. I mean, have you ever both been involved in games where the referee's grasp of the rules is sketchy?
All the time, I'd imagine.
I've got to say the job of a referee doesn't get any easier, but it's safe to say that they don't make their lives any easier themselves. That's for sure.
Okay, well, I can imagine. Did Lewis Dunk come back into training on the next day with his tail on fire? I mean, you know, we saw his reaction after the game, and you know, and we know that, you know, they and the rest of the lads, they're all professionals, and they, you know, they look forward to the next game. But you know, as AD's pointing out, we don't need help from the referees for us not to score. I'll say, has anyone come across anything like that before?
Well, I certainly haven't. No, it was obviously a bizarre set of circumstances, which still hard to comprehend now. And it is obviously very frustrating because you put in the performance that you get and that you do, and then you don't come away with anything where you could have quite easily obviously got the point or got the win, and it just adds to that frustration. Like Shan said, it's everyone knows what a difficult job it is, but it was a little bit hard to know why the decision got made. And then obviously with the VAR and stuff, it was a difficult one to digest on the day.
Sure. I mean, there was one thing I did watch, and I just, you know, your personal point of view on this, your personal opinions rather than maybe a club opinion, is that I saw a bit of footage on Twitter from the A-League where the referee was in contact with the VAR. But certainly the broadcasters, I think the fans, but certainly the broadcasters could hear that part of the conversation. Do you think that football can be enhanced if we brought that in here? Or do you think there's just the pitfalls that the referee and the VAR, their considerations should be sacrosanct and should be theirs alone? I was just wondering if you know, how you felt about decisions being, you know, sort of being made more obvious and more open to the public.
Yeah, you know, I think the problem that we're all having is the unknown and the period of time in between, you know, an action happening and a decision being made. And I think it certainly would encourage a little bit more patience from the fans, that if they're, you know, privy to the processes and the decisions and the rationale behind what's being made, I think it probably, yeah, makes us as a fan or as a spectator more patient. Because I think we all sit there at times and the referee's got his finger to his ear and we're going, what's happening? Mm-hmm. Whereas, yeah, if we could maybe I think it's rugby. It's you can hear the conversations with the referees.
And cricket.
Yeah. Cricket as well.
I certainly think that would make it more acceptable from a spectator's point of view, I think, to what's actually happening.
But what about a coach's point of view?
We would have, and not always, but, you know, the fourth official is often the one that would keep both dugouts in the know, if you like. Mm-hmm. So we would have access, probably not to what's being said on the pitch. You know, in our case with Lewis Dunk there, you know, he had obviously had a conversation with the referee at that point. You know, we wouldn't be we wouldn't know that, but we would certainly get an explanation after a period of time where the referee is telling the fourth official to then keep both dugouts in the know. So that happens certainly at under 23 level, and I would imagine it happens at senior level too.
Okay. Well, let's just draw a line. There's nothing we can do about it. It's frustrating, but let's hope that
we did make it to David Squires in the Guardian.
Yeah,
we did. Of all times we were going to do that, David Squires, we made it finally. Yeah.
No bongos were harmed in the making of that
cartoon.
But okay, well, we've got to talk about your Albion histories. Crofty's, yours is a bit longer probably, so we'll start with you. And your Albion history started before you actually joined us. Do you know why?
No, go on. The goal, maybe?
Your first professional goal was?
Yeah, against Brighton on Boxing Day.
Yeah, you lost that.
What's that, for Gillingham?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was a cold day as well. It was close. The game was close to getting called off because of a frozen pitch at the Wiv thing.
Right.
It was touch and go whether it was going to be on. And then my dad and my brother come down to watch, and obviously Championship at the time, and two teams going at it. I think we took the lead, and it was a header. It was a nice feeling to get that first professional goal. Just a little bit bittersweet when obviously we lost 2-1. But on the I didn't go on the team bus on the way home. I went home with me dad and me brother, and it was a nice feeling to share that with them with my first professional goal. And yeah, it was it's funny how things happen with with my relation and ship and connection with the club now. It's like as meant to be.
Can you remember who scored the goals for the Albion that day?
I remember. Carpenter scored the winner, which I think it was the winner. It was a half volley. Can't remember who scored their equaliser. But it's funny that Rich Carpenter, he don't live too far from where I live now. And every now and then I see him in the petrol station, like 6:30 in the morning when I'm leaving early doors to go to work. I've seen him a couple of times. I think he might be a landscape gardener or something like that, but he's a nice, real nice fella, and he was a real tough competitor, you know.
Yeah, it was Adam Virgo who got the other goal.
Oh, was it?
But you came through from the Chelsea system originally, and you made your debut for Gillingham at a very young age as a 16-year-old. But
wow.
I mean, were you actually, Shally? Were you both at Chelsea going through the Chelsea thing at the same time?
No, believe it or not, I'm a fair bit younger than Crofty.
Can't tell.
Is this true, Crofty?
Yeah, like you said, you wouldn't think so. Even though he's looking really well, I think I'm looking fairly well for my age as well. So we always have a little bit of banter.
Where is that? You're younger than Glenn Murray, though, aren't you, Crofty?
Slightly. Yeah. Again, probably a little bit of a surprise if you put me next to him, but he's a good mate as well, you know.
Yeah, but there's a reason you got given the nickname the Machine, though, Crofty. So it's kind of like
which was.
Well, no, basically, from what I've heard, and I think it was, I mean, Adam Virgo tells this story quite a lot, that when Crofty first came to the club, he used to go into the gym, and he could not believe the work he was putting in there, and really? Then going out training. So the guy's like a machine.
Oh, right.
And the nickname kind of stuck, I believe.
Is he still like that, Shannon?
I can assure you he is.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you did come to Brighton, and it was Russell Slade who brought you here. What attracted you to come here in the first place, Crofty?
The ambition, even at that point, I remember coming to meet obviously the gaffer Russell Slade at the time, and he was sort of, I remember him really hitting hard about it's one of the maybe the last sleeping giants out there. And when he sort of discussed with me what the club was looking to do at that point, even though it was still a couple of years away, it still had the sort of talking about the new stadium and stuff then. And it really sort of touched me to think, oh, this club's going places. And I'd played a few times against Brighton, and obviously I live an hour or so away, so I'd been to Brighton for day trips with the family and stuff, and it's obviously a fantastic place to go and visit. And then when they showed interest, and I see the ambition that was there, and I've always been a really driven, ambitious person, and wanted to be a part of projects. And it was certainly going to be a project, and I was really sort of enticed by that, and I was proved right as soon as I joined the club. I knew there was an underlying ambition to move that club in a real strong direction.
Yeah, because I mean that happened just after the Great Escape season, where we could have very easily gone down to the fourth tier again. And Russell did actually make quite a few signings that summer, but. I mean, clearly you got player of the season. So, I mean, you obviously worked out. But there was a few others that probably didn't. And it probably doesn't help when one of your teammates ends up in the tabloids for the wrong reasons.
It was a mixed season, because obviously a couple of months into it, the management changed. So, you obviously, when that happens, you know, obviously you ain't had the start that you would have liked. And then there was obviously the appointment of Gus and Eastaff, which obviously transformed the direction, steered us from the lower parts of the division to obviously secure that safety, and then look to push on the season after. So it was, a real sort of group that was started off sort of maybe a little bit disconnected, if you like, and not really aligned to obviously all pulling in the same direction. Maybe that was a part of obviously the players signed or whatever, but there was a lot of good players signed as well. It just maybe took a little bit more time to get everyone to gel, maybe because there was such a big number of players added to the squad that season. So it does take a little bit of time to gel, and maybe obviously it just needed a little bit longer, and obviously Gus got it right and obviously moved us in the right direction.
So when Gus did turn up, so we're talking about sort of November 2009. I mean, there's someone, you know, for someone who'd been at Chelsea, but someone who'd grown up watching Gus playing, what was it like for you and around the club generally when you realise, blimey, we've got Gus Poyet's going to be the manager? How cool is this? I mean, what was your feeling for that at the time?
Yeah, really excited. Obviously, being a midfielder myself as well, and obviously Gus was a top midfielder, so. That probably ignited that sort of excitement even more. And obviously when he come through the door and started to work with him and do some real lots of individual stuff regarding midfielders' roles and responsibilities. And then obviously he gave me the armband in the first game, and that obviously made me feel 10 feet tall. And it really sort of kick-started my sort of... you know, my season, if you like, even though I'd done all right before, I just felt like it lifted me and lifted the group. And I was really excited to work with Gus and see where it could take us.
So, AD, where were you for that Southampton game?
On Andy Bass's sofa.
that is one of those games that we can put down as being, you know, all right, you know, we saw it as the start of something, but it's one of those where Brighton fans can puff on a big cigar at the end of the day saying that was pretty damn good. You know, we all enjoyed that, but whew, what was that like for you?
Yeah, a real special moment, special evening. And I remember the feeling, obviously, getting the armband for the first game, Gus's first game, live on Sky against a real strong Southampton team, full out. Great atmosphere, and obviously we got off to a great start. Mazza's obviously has got the two goals, then I think Ricky Lambert gets the penalty, and then it's a real tight affair. And then obviously to get the winner near the end, to sort of, like, you know, game over, job done, go and celebrate mad in front of the Albion fans in the corner. It was a proper good night. And then And then obviously on the bus on the way back, it's one of them moments that you never forget. It's obviously gets shown quite a bit because of obviously their sort of a South Coast derby and a lot of, you know, a lot of passion goes into them games, and it was a great moment. And yeah, being live on Sky with family, friends, and obviously, you know, them games are for the fans, them wins are for the fans, and it was a real, real highlight.
Yeah, it really was. Because, I mean, it's become a kind of like an iconic game with the Albion. I mean, it's very difficult to look back at that now and you think we weren't on telly very often at the time. I mean, that obviously we were playing Southampton, but that game was in League One. So, you know, it's...
I do recall, actually, someone said, I think it might have even been this chap called Paul Camlin. I've no idea where he is these days. But there's this chap called Paul Camlin. I remember him telling me afterwards that when the Sky people spoke to them, they said that, you know, the Sky people themselves, you know, they sometimes get to show some real stinkers of games. But that one was an absolute doozy for a third division game. You know, say, you know, 25, 30,000 crowd. A team that's a little bit on its uppers and versus the home team, which has, you know, had its financial issues with, you know, with the extra spice of the media darling Gus Poyet sort of starting there and Brighton playing really, really well. Like you say, I mean, Crofty says, you know, that first half, I think we battered them. Then they got back into it. Like I say, it's always a moody penalty at St Mary's. It just always is. And then, like I say, Crofty came home. I was in the Lord Nelson in Trafalgar Street that day, and there were a couple of Southampton fans there, and they to be fair, they just said, what can we say, you know, you did us that day. But it is one of those where you just think that was sexy, that was and let's say you running into the crowd. I mean, if that crowd hadn't been there, I'm sure you'd have carried running all the way home. It looked that good.
But yeah, wicked man.
I mean, but that game, like it did announce Gus Poyet as a rival at the club. I mean, it was kind of a bit of a bitty season whilst his ideas were bedded in ahead of that amazing season, the season after. But you weren't there, Crofty, weren't you? Despite you got player of the season. And
how easy was it to actually understand? Because basically, bearing in mind that Gus Poyet's tactics have been a little bit, I'd imagine, a left turn of what you'd been used to with Dean. So how easy was it for the players to bed down with Gus's tactics?
He was really demanding, which I loved. Training was of a real high standard. Intensity was very high. He had a certain way of playing. He wanted us to enjoy the ball, wanted us to obviously dominate possession, create chances and be relentless with our work ethic when we didn't have the ball. So he was really demanding, but... everyone bought into it straight away. He was very infectious and passionate about how he went about his work. And it sort of rubbed off on the lads. And we quickly bought into that. And if you didn't, then you weren't going to be involved. So it was, it was good.
And what did he specifically ask of you?
I think he knew that I could handle the ball. Like, obviously, he knew that I'd been brought up the Chelsea way because obviously I was there from 9 till 16. So he knew what that would mean. Hopefully that he would have maybe seen some games before and realised that I was a hard-working, all-action player that wanted to give everything for the badge. So I think captains will maybe be the ones that will really work hard, will really sort of get everyone together. Hopefully he could see that I was a good communicator. And I think he just wanted me to hopefully lead by example by the way that I played. I at the time I was a good communicator, but obviously nowhere near sort of the communicator that I would be now, because obviously with experience you get better at that. But I think hopefully I had a knack of getting the players together and trying to get the best out of obviously myself, but also the boys around me.
So Shannon, what were you doing in 2009?
2009.
Is he that young that you're still in nappies?
2009, I think I would have been working as a goalkeeping coach at Chelsea at the time.
Really?
How old were you? Yeah. Would you have been back then?
I said, spill the beans.
Oh, it's a good question that now. 2009, so we're 2020, 11 years ago. So I would have been 19.
Blimey.
As a coach?
As a coach, yeah. So my coaching journey started very very young, because you know, I always wanted to work in the professional game, but made a decision pretty young that it wasn't going to be as a player. So turned to coaching and was very fortunate with some of the roles that I got and the people that mentored me and supported me. But I was doing the under 9s, 10s, 11s goalies in the academy at Chelsea at the time.
Was it at Chelsea? Was there much interest in what Gus Poyet was doing at Brighton?
Always, I think, obviously, because, you know, how highly Chelsea regard him. I think, you know, one thing that Chelsea have always done is had, you know, a real affiliation with past players. You know, I think even Crofty, we spoke a couple of weeks ago when he returned there, or, you know, they're very fond of their own players and people that have worked for them. So for sure, yeah.
Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online, radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. This show is brought to you, as ever, in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil Shelley from aforementioned oldfootballshirts.com has given us a shirt of the week, which Al is going to describe for me now.
Now, Phil is trolling us, isn't he, frankly?
I think so.
Now, I know that you're going to give us some more information presently, but what we've got here is the reverse of the Albion's mid-80s kit, where previously we had blue with white panelling across the shoulders. Here we've got white with this horrible deep red panelling. But what we've got here is, rather than anything being transferred or imprinted, it's all been sewn on by Yanan. It's Adidas again. It's got a huge old 1980s BP logo, the old shield, with a badge that's got a black square inside, a white square inside, a blue notion, which I am pretty certain is SB Hamburg. I have no idea what their home shirts are normally. So let's say the third shirt from 1983.
And you would be right. This is the one-off shirt used by Hamburg SV in the final game of the 82-83 season. Designated the Meisterklub, or the champion shirt, as after the winning the game 6-2 v Schalke, they were crowned champions of the Bundesliga. And to this date, this is the last time they won the German League. The club was formed in 1887, initially known as Sportklub Germania Hamburg. They adopted the name Hamburger Sportverein in 1919. Their nickname, and it seems typically efficient and German, is the Rothosen, which translates to be the red shorts. Home is the Volkspark Stadium with a capacity of 57,000. The stadium was built in 1925, but Hamburg didn't move into it until after it is refurbished in 1953. Prior to that, they had played at the 27,000 capacity Sportplatz am Rumbam in stadium. Hamburg are one of the most followed clubs in Germany, even though they are currently in Bundesliga 2, the second tier of German football. The golden era is regarded as being between 73 and 87, when they won the league three times, the DFB Cup twice, the European Cup Winners' Cup, and of course the European Cup in 1983. Manfred Katz holds the record for the most appearances for the Red Shorts, 581 games between 1971 and 1991. Striker Uwe Seeler is regarded as one of Germany's greatest ever players, scoring 404 goals for the Hamburgers before transferring to Cork Celtic and playing just one game before retiring in 1978. Another great who played just 28 times for Hamburg was Franz Beckenbauer. UK link for you is Kevin Keegan, famously moved to Hamburg from Liverpool in 1977 and played three seasons in the Bundesliga. And he left with a Bundesliga winner's medal in his pocket from the 78-79 season. Other players to have made their name at both at Hamburg and in the UK include Marcus Babel, Thomas Gravesen, Tony Yeboah, and Rudy van Nistelrooy. And just before we move on, we have a couple of things on the notice board. Firstly, you may have noticed, well, we mentioned it on the show last week, in fact, that we're currently auctioning off 1985 Brighton red away shirt. Very limited edition, worn by Justin Fashionew. The first week has gone exceptionally well. Amazingly, there's another few days to go on this.
In fact, your closing time is 4:30 on Monday, the 8th of March. So if you listen to this after the deadline, too bad.
Yeah, and all the money raised from this will be going towards our three charities: Cancer Research UK, Brighton and Hove Food Bank, and St Barnabas Hospice.
So if you're still fancying this shirt, you still have a little bit of time, hopefully. Do just head over to eBay, search Brighton 1985. The red shirt will be there. Good luck if you do still fancy it. I understand that people have sold their cars, their chest wigs, their soul in order to finance this. So if you do fancy owning a very, very rare piece of Brighton history, then there you are. There's your opportunity.
Okay, the other news that's reached us this week is that the Peter James series Grace is going to hit our screens on the 14th of March.
We did, of course, interview Peter James a few weeks ago, not long after filming finished. He was in great form. I think he was very pleased with how it went, especially with the restrictions of lockdown and curfew and what have you. But I know that he was delighted with John Sims' performance. And since he's seen the rushes and the final edit, if he's delighted, then the rest of us should be. Those fans of Peter James should really get into this. But if you want to listen, make sure you listen to the interview that we had with him. It's still in our archive on Audio Boom. Just search down for Peter James and you'll find him there. And he's a fascinating character and in every way that AD and I are not.
Now, Crofty, you did move on and you got a good offer to go to Norwich and you got promoted to the Premier League with them.
Yeah, obviously, when Norwich come in at the time, they was a club, obviously, in a higher division, a real sort of, at that time, it was a real progressive move for myself and one that was excited about, albeit at the same time, it was a tough decision because, obviously, the year that I had at Brighton, I fell in love with the club and the people that worked there, so it weren't a straightforward one, but It was a progressive move for me, and as touched on earlier in the show, I was very ambitious, and I was excited because Norwich were a big club. They were moving in the right direction, and it was a real sort of confidence boost that they wanted to sign me. They wanted to make me their first signing, which was really a real sort of like. They really wanted me, and I knew that. So that was obviously always going to be attractive for a player. And then, the two seasons I had there was fantastic. And I had a real good connection with the club. And the first season, getting promoted to the Premier League was a dream come true. And then the season after to play a game in the Premier League, I was so happy with, and I worked so hard to achieve that, and it was a dream come true. And we had a good season. We finished, I think it was 12th. So it was an incredible couple of years for myself.
So what happened at the end of those 2 years with Norwich then? Were you just sort of persona non grata, not wanted on troubles, or did the hankering to come back here? What happened?
I had a year left at Norwich on my contract, and obviously, like I said, the two previous seasons couldn't have gone much better, really. And but Paul Lambert, with obviously because of his success and the club's success, Aston Villa came calling, which was a massive, massive club, and again a progressive move for Paul Lambert at the time. And he obviously took that. We had obviously a new manager coming in, but that took a bit of time. And in that time, Brighton showed some interest to sign me back, and I've seen the club obviously move into a new stadium, have ambition of getting to the Premier League in a way that maybe Norwich had done. And even though I was in the Premier League, it still really appealed to me because of obviously I knew the people at the club. I knew what they wanted to achieve and I could see what the club was going to do. I had I had a son at the time, but my wife was pregnant with my daughter now. But at the time, it was a chance to come back home as well, to live at home and to have two kids growing up to close to their grandparents and their family was appealing as well. So it felt right. At the time, Norwich didn't really want me to go, so it took a bit of time. I had a pre-season and then in the end, it was probably me saying, you know what, I want to go back to Brighton, and I really wanted to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's a massive thing you've just said there, Crofty, because, I mean, that's the kind of thing that doesn't get spoken about an awful lot in football, about the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, the family stuff.
Trading off money for happiness, isn't it?
Yeah, look, obviously, there's so many different variables that you got to take into consideration when you're moving, which obviously a lot of people, they shouldn't understand it because they're not you. They don't have to think the way you're thinking, but obviously we do. You've got families, you've got lives that you want to look after, and it was a real tough decision as well, because Norwich was, I had two great years there and was happy there. It weren't as if I was unhappy. I've got a fantastic relationship with that club as well. But it just, to sign a long-term deal at Brighton, to go back to a club which had massive ambition, and I knew what the club was about and how much I loved my time there for that season. It just felt right. It was stability, it was security, but it was mainly like because of ambition and drive. And although I was in the Premier League, it felt like I could be returning there with another club, and it just felt right.
I mean, obviously, it's been well documented, but for you, the club, you left the club with Dean, and you came back to the club at the Amex. And I mean, how different was that for you?
Yeah, it was surreal, really. It was. I remember when I signed back, I'd stayed at the Jury's Inn by the train station, and I signed, and then 2 days later, we was playing Chelsea in a pre-season friendly.
You scored.
It was. I remember we played Chelsea. I think we won
3-1.
3-1, yeah. I can't remember who scored the other two, but
Ashley,
Barnsley, was it Barnsley? Yeah, and then I remember that night we'd had a meal out with a team meal out. It was like a team bonding one, and I remember scoring the winner, being sort of reignited to the club, and then having the meal with the boys. It felt brilliant. And then walking down the seafront back to the hotel. I don't know if it was Drury's or the Hilton, but I remember just thinking, oh, man, I'm buzzing to be back here. And really? It was just a moment similar to that Southampton game where you just think, oh, I think I made the right decision. I'm excited. I can't wait. We've just beat Chelsea in a pre-season friendly. This guy and attack this season and see what we can do. And it was a real sort of, I can remember as if it was yesterday. So it was, yeah.
You've got a real hankering for the city, haven't you?
Yeah, I absolutely love it. Like, when I come back, and Sham was a massive, he obviously, I was coming back in a different role the third time round, which we'll probably go on to, but he could tell that the love that I had for the club, and now it was going to be in a different role, and Sham sort of made that transition really easy for me, along with Si and a lot of other staff, and instantly we had a chemistry that I could tell how buzzing and how excited he loved the club. He could tell how excited I was. And I think it just, obviously with a new stadium, the new training ground, everything just going in such a quick and a spiral of just absolute ambition and drive, along with the way the city is and the fans are and the people are. It just, I everything that has to do with a club, the badge means everything to me. And I think when a badge means that much to you, you're all in. And I think being all in with anything you do in life in general is going to hopefully give you the best opportunity to have an impact on that club and that city.
Yeah. I mean, we just can't keep you away, really, can we? I mean, it's well, and that's a good thing.
We want to.
But I mean, that club you came back to, obviously, like you said, we're in the Amex, we're in the Championship, and that squad that you came back into was amazing. There's some absolutely wonderful players in there, and others that that you would come and play with. Like, I mean, what was it like playing with Vicente, for instance?
Yeah, the team was full of talent, full of hungry players, wanting to win every week, wanting to get to the promised land with the Premier League, that next bit. And the team that we had over the last, say, 3-4 years, compared to the team that I'd come back from at the WIV team, it was there was a real progressive recruitment in terms of the quality of player coming. But also within that, you had the players that had moved with the team, that had progressed and got better with the team. So you had that nucleus of players that had been at the WIV team and worked hard and been a part of that. So them be a part of this new generation with the added ones coming in. It was a real good blend.
Yeah, because you were playing in the game where Lewis Dunk made his debut at MK Dons.
Yeah, wicked. Like I say to Shannon and the rest of the staff, to see the way Dunkey's matured now, obviously I see Dunkey as a real young player who's coming up and breaking in and working as hard as he could to make his debut, then stay in the team. And all the parts of football that come as a young player, which is tough. And then to see the player that he is now and the captain he is now and the way he conducts himself, I love seeing that. I really do.
Shannon, I mean, obviously you've seen the journey that Lewis has had, and you've now got players that you're involved with coaching that are on that same journey. So that must be a massive yardstick to use as an example.
Yeah, 100%. And I think working within our academy and seeing recently the amount of debuts that we've had. You know, I believe we're currently number one in the Premier League for, you know, academy graduate minutes in our first team this season. And for any young academy player to look into the first team and see, you know, Lewis Dunk, Ben White, Solly, you know, the list goes on. That's one hell of a, you know, a... It gives them belief that not every club and not every player has when they're in an academy, because, you know, sometimes as a young footballer, you know, the first team feels a million miles away. But, you know, we're very lucky at Brighton that for our under-23s, it's very achievable. And if you're good enough, you'll get an opportunity. So that's for an academy member of staff and you know, for staff that recruit young players, that's a wonderful thing that we can say to a young player.
So let's rewind the clock a little bit, Shannon, here. Tell us what it is that you do at Lancing. How long is it since you got the gig at Lancing? And tell us what it is you do there.
So I joined in September 2016. Mm-hmm. And I joined as head of academy goalkeeping. I was at Reading previously with the same role, but I was also an assistant coach to the under-23 manager. But I joined solely as the head of academy goalkeeping and Simon Rusk and Vic Bragg. And then I can't remember how long after, maybe the following January, the legend that is Vic Bragg went part-time. And it was then that I became Simon Rusk's assistant manager. And been doing that role for 3 years-ish. So, yeah, it's a dual role of overseeing all the goalkeeping from under 8 to under 23, as well as with Simon's assistant manager before he left.
So with that in mind, let's stick to the goalkeeping side for the moment. How does that mean that you interact then with the... I mean, we'll talk about generally the pathway in a minute, but... Obviously, the pathway for under 23 to the first team. How does that mean that you interact with Ben Roberts? I mean, do you work alongside him, with him, for him? How's the structure work that way?
Yeah, so Ben was firstly a big reason, one of the reasons why I joined the football club. He was someone that I knew and was aware of previously. And for any goalkeeping coach in my role, so when you lead the academy goalkeeping, who the first in goalkeeping coaches is imperative to whether you can get goalies through. So Ben was a real big reason why I joined, and it gave me real belief that with Ben as a goalkeeping coach, with Ben as the first in goalkeeping coach, that one day our number one would be an academy graduate. So that was really important. And for me and Ben, we speak daily. Before obviously the pandemic, we'd meet every morning, myself, Ben and Casper, and talk through the day. And you know, it's very frequently that young goalies would train with Ben and Casper's senior group. And, you know, through lockdown, we've managed to have, you know, every goalie from under eight to the first team on a Zoom together. So it's a very together, collaborative department from Ben, Casper, myself, down to all the other goalkeeping coaches.
And what do you think you've learned from Ben in the time that you've got here?
You know, many things that Ben's very good at, but he, you know, his management of goalkeepers, and you know, ensuring that, because the bit in between under 23 football and playing in our first team is a real crucial stage in any player's development, regardless of what position they play in. But you know, managing, you know, Christian and Robert, for example, through their loans, through their disappointments, the timing of when to call them back, when to go to another loan, what level. You know, Ben's very experienced and has a lot of know-how of the when and the where's, and you know, when to give a bit of tough love, when to call them back into our building, into our teams, and you know, work on their game, and then maybe back out again on loan. So that period is a really important period for any player, really.
You mentioned there that a lot of the kids, the young goalkeepers, would go up to the first team and help with training. There was a really great interview with Glenn Murray recently. I think it was on Five Live, where he was saying that he would do an awful lot of training with Rob Sanchez, and he could see how good he was going to become then, and that he was putting shots in an area where no keeper would have any right to stop it. I mean, where Steve Sidwell says where the spiders live, and he was just pulling that with these saves after save. He said, "This kid's incredible."
Yeah, when I joined, Robert would have been a first-year pro. So he would have done his scholarship under 17, under 18, and then I joined under 19. So his first year in under 23 football. And one thing that stood out immediately on my first day was Rob's physical attributes. You know, he, for someone who's 6'4", 6'5", you know, stereotypically, you know, 6'4", 6'5", goalkeeper, isn't the most quickest and isn't the most agile. With Rob, he is extremely quick and extremely agile. So not only did he fill the goal by frame and by stature, he then had physical attributes that were, you know, genetically gifted, that meant that he had unbelievable goal coverage. And like, you know, Muzza said there, he could save things that not a lot of people could save.
Now, at the beginning of the season, it's probably fair to say that Sanchez probably would have been, of those four main goalkeepers we've got, or that we had, probably the fourth choice, certainly to the layman, to the fan looking in. Now, obviously, a couple of things happened. Christian Morton had his very unfortunate accident against in the friendly. But could you take us through the thought processes that you'd have had, I'm sure the discussion you'd have had collectively between the various coaching people, to say to Graham Potter, "We think Bob Sanchez should be next up"?
I think the first conversation that, you know, I would have had with Ben predominantly at the end of last season would be that, you know, Robert, you know, would be in our plans to stay in. And you know, when you're planning, you know, a player's pathway or journey for the upcoming season, you're always predicting, you know, you have a rough idea of what your group would look like, whether it be a goalkeeping group or a squad. And you try your best to stick to it. You can't always, because things happen, like you mentioned there. You know, Christian gets injured, so that can sometimes change your plans. But we knew that, you know, after Rob's period at Forest Green and Rochdale, that you know, it's a good time to keep him in the building. You know, let him work with Ben on a daily basis for a long period of time, and also, you know, come to terms and understanding the way that Graham Potter wants to work, and how he wants to play, and his philosophy. So, you know, there certainly wasn't any conversations on, you know, Rob would be the number one. It was just to join the group, work hard every day, and predominantly work with Ben every day, because he wouldn't have had that for a long period of time. And, you know, every time a player goes out on loan, it tells you a different story, and you learn a little bit more about him, and then you bring him back into your building, and you try and work on those bits that you've seen on loan that he may need help on. But you also see his strengths and what he can bring to the game. So really, the conversations were only, let's keep Rob in and work with Ben and you know, let him learn and the philosophy that Graham wants to play with.
I mean, myself and Alan, when we get the opportunity and when the Albion aren't playing, we like to go and check out Worthing, for instance. And we've seen both Rocco Reese and Carl Rusworth put on amazing performances. And then you see their birth certificates, you're thinking, like, what? I mean, it's incredible.
They're both 12, aren't they?
I think so, yeah. But it's, I mean, you know, and you know, there were stories in the paper where Barcelona were sniffing around Rushworth. I'm not quite sure how much truth there is in that. I think that's just.
I know, Shannon's got a good agent. He knows how to put a good story out there. Yeah. So, Crofty, because we've got to move on a little bit. Crofty, you've now, you and Shannon have been given this gig of interim under 23 managers. But obviously, you're very familiar with the setup and what have you. Now, with some people, I mean, certainly when there was the game against Villa last season and Potter basically picked a team, half a team of kids, and everyone's going, what on earth's going on? And they put on a very good show. That they then seem to presume, right, well, if they're ready for the first team, that means they should be there all the time, and therefore the squad, and so on and so forth. And could you actually give us some clarification, some kind of idea of the nature of those who are under your wing at the under 23s and how it is that they get to be in the first team and what happens when they've been, you know, not required in the first team anymore and come back to you. Tell us how that transition both ways works.
Yeah, no problems, Alan. I think it's very, very different for every individual in the 23 squad. I'm quickly finding that out because everyone's on a different sort of journey. And you've got to really respect that because, everyone's pathway is different. You look at Ben White's, where he's had the free loans and done sort of progress from League Two, League One, Championship, then Premier League. So you've got that way of maybe doing something, and he would have done his time with the 23s, like one or two seasons, played a lot of games that way. And then you've obviously got, say, Aaron Connolly, who only has the one loan period, which weren't very long, and does most of his time just at Brighton through the scholarship, and then obviously plays long in the 23s and then catapulted to the first team that way. So everyone's pathway and journey looks a little bit different. And I think it's our responsibility to not let players sort of compare themselves to each other and appreciate that everyone's journey does look different. And we've just got to prepare as best as we can for whatever that journey is. We try and pride ourselves on our daily approach and every day trying to come into the building, wanting to improve, wanting to get better. Body language is massive. Our manager, obviously Graham Potter, is very big on body language and wants every young player that gets their chance with the first team, whether that's training, whether that's a prolonged period of time. They need to show good body language and go and make an impression. And we want to do that. We want to give them self-belief that they're going up there because they're good enough. And then obviously you got the loan pathway as well. So there's all different aspects of what that looks like. And obviously communication is key. Obviously having that relationship and that communication with the first team staff to to let them know who may be ready, who's doing well, who's not doing so well, who, what position, all that sort of stuff. And their communication with myself and Shan and the rest of the guys is really, really good. And you don't often get that. So it's probably a big reason why hopefully when the lads have gone up, they have done well and they're as ready as they can be.
I mean, we've seen this season already that, I mean, for instance, Radek Hedra has made his debut. I mean, that which came from pretty much nowhere, really. I mean,
Sanchez's debut came from nowhere, as far as we're concerned.
We've also seen the increase, obviously, with the concussion thing coming in. We've seen the increase to 9 substitutes being on the bench. So we've also seen Jensen Weir featuring on the South bench. Tom McGill's been there. I think, has Teddy Jenks been on the bench? I think so,
a couple of times, yeah.
Yeah, these players, this pathway, I mean, Graham is keen to give these players an opportunity. And the short time he's been at the club, we've also seen the average age of the first team squad drop massively because a lot of the older players that are no longer with us, and he's given these guys an opportunity. So I mean, for the players that you're coaching, they must see that and think, wow, this is a real opportunity.
100%, and you've got obviously the likes of Dan Ashworth and John Maulin who've played a massive part in that and making sure sort of pathways ain't blocked and stuff like that. So the amount of work that they've put into helping young players have chances, along with a manager who's obviously can see doesn't mind chucking young players in. It's a really exciting time to be at the club if you are a young player, and that's why for me and Shan and the rest of the staff and all the academy staff, it's a real good tool to use because you know they're doing it. So it's a real, you know, every young player, especially in the 23s, you could have that chance. Why are you not going to give everything you've got every day? Be really sort of mindful that this club does give young players a chance. And if you don't get that chance when you think you might be ready or you think it might be happening, you've still got to keep going. And that chance might be in a couple of weeks, couple of months, or it might be a couple of years. And that's why I said where you can't compare, you can't sort of get carried away with whether you're having a good time, bad time. But know that the club does like to play young players now, and it's an exciting time to be a part of the academy.
So, Shannon, when the club is considering, you know, its first team coach, and I mean, hopefully won't have to do so again for quite a while, but when it has done so, it's done it with an air, with a mind of it there being a kind of identity, a consideration as the way to play football. You know, what we're not is a Route 1 thing from the 80s or anything like that. But it's fair to say that I think that people could see a clear blue water between the way that certainly at the end of Chris Hughton's time at the club versus Graham Potter's first couple of years, there's a kind of a distinctive change in certainly how the first team plays. Now, given that when you have the academies and the pathway teams are there to have that kind of identity foisted upon them, filtering down, does this mean that you almost have to put an old kind of tactics book away and bring a new one out each time there's a new manager that turns up?
What we try and do in the academy is we try and have a way of playing, and principally it can slightly be flexible. But really, for as long as I've been there and so I joined and Chris was the manager, our way of playing hasn't changed now that Graham is in charge. You know, from with Dan Ashworth and John Morning, you know, we have a way of playing. We want all our teams to be possession-based teams. And, you know, we have a lot of things that run through the academy from top to bottom, which make the transition far more seamless. You know, we have something called individual development plans, and a player will have his own individual development plan from the age of 9 all the way up to the first team. And it follows him all the way through. And every time the player is handed over from coach to coach, the understanding of that player is extensive. But, you know, certainly for myself and Crofty, you know, it's in our players' best interest to have an understanding of the demands of the first team, both tactically and principally. But they will, you know, with the first team staff being so inclusive to us as staff and to the players, you know, the players will have experiences a little bit difficult now with COVID, but going up and being part of their training groups, part of their meetings on quite a regular basis. So they will have a good understanding of what's required. And that probably comes down to the how together and how good the communication is from top to bottom of the football club.
Now Crofty, when you came back to the club, you signed a playing contract as well, and you're actually given a first team squad number as well, which was caused some confusion and delight. And I mean, clearly you were hoping to catch the eye of the gaffer and get some Premier League minutes under your belt again. But
do you ever train with the first team?
Not hardly at all, but I have a couple of times in the time period that I've had role. Just a couple of times last season when, say, the starters from the first team would have had a light day and the rest of the players needed a little bit more, and then we'd make the numbers up. And they were tough, like, obviously, against top players, like, at the age that I am. It was...
Could you cut it?
I'd like to think so. I'll let Shan answer that, but I think I cut to the. I remember Basuma. He was just coming back into it, and I think he probably he wouldn't have realised maybe that was the first team at Brighton before. He probably thought like, who's this? And then when I started training, I thought he probably thought it, I had a little bit and had a little bit of banter with him regarding that. I couldn't get near him.
Joking aside, you had this role to come back and as almost like an on-pitch liaison, I guess. I mean, how did that role work? I mean, and have you actually now hung up your boots? Now you're in the dugout.
Yeah, it's sort of obviously a pioneering role, unique role that the club was really sort of to think of it and to then do it is it shows how sort of forward thinking the club is, and it was. As soon as I got offered it, it was something that I was really attracted to and couldn't wait to get my teeth into it. And obviously making that I was doing my badges and looking to do the transition. But I still felt like I could offer a bit because I was going to be a first team player at Yeovil still in the senior league. So it was a real good opportunity to still get that fix of still playing a little bit and training a bit. But then obviously sort of do my hours on the coaching side and really... I was really infused by that when I was doing my badges and knew it was something that I would definitely want to do. The role quickly sort of, I quickly got into it. It took a little bit of time to sort of know how it was going to work. And it sort of worked train a day, coach a day, train a day, coach a day. Obviously played quite a few games last season and played a few this season as well, which is really enjoyable. And then just really sort of gauging where the players are at, what are they doing in the heat of the action, seeing how they were communicating, seeing how they were taking information on board, and connecting and building them relationship with young players that I absolutely loved. And then hopefully that's helped me with the coaching because hopefully they have a good connection and they respect what I've done in the game and how I conduct myself. And then obviously now doing a role with Shan, I have at the moment my boots have been hanged up and I don't think it would have been right for me to have picked myself sort of in the first few games. I don't think that would have gone down too well with the players. So.
Just to jump in, when you know you spoke Crofty about, you know, will we look for another under 23 player coach? I've got to say, from a coaching perspective, when we found out that it was possible and Crofty was going to come and do that role, we were delighted and seeing him work every day. It's not a role for anyone because I can assure you, you know, data would come back in from training. Crofty would be top of the GPS and the physical outputs.
That's because he's a machine.
He is a machine. But his standards every day were outstanding. And when you have someone in that role, it needs to be someone that the players can really look up to. And as a coach of the team, you know that No matter what that person is feeling, no matter what form that person is in, that he's going to be professional no matter what. And Crofty 100% is a professional to in every area of his life. And he would have played a big part in some of those young players' development in the time that he's been doing the role. You know, look at the progress of Teddy Jenks, Jensen Weir, Warren O'Hora, you know, just to name a few, and they're players that Crofty have impacted very heavily in that unique role. You know, it's one thing for me and Simon at the time to coach and put on practices and bits and pieces, but they would have got some real invaluable nuggets of experience and expertise being on the pitch with Crofty. And I remember in the EFL Trophy against AFC Wimbledon, I think we were 1-0 up and we were hanging on for dear life. And me and Simon had no doubt that if Crofty wasn't on the pitch at that time, we wouldn't have held on, because through his experience, he found a way of teaching young players to hang on when others let go. So yeah, just on that role and finding someone else, we may try, but Crofty was outstanding at it.
How much feedback do you get from Steve Sidwell as well? Because obviously he's got the 16s.
Yeah, a lot. The beauty of how we work and how John Moyne likes to run the academy, we're all in meetings together. You know, there's no 23s one side, 18s. It's very together. Me doing the head of goalkeeping part of my role, go and watch the other age groups and speak to City pretty often, as would Crofty. So communication is really free flowing, and you know, we're very lucky to have. Obviously, we had before Crofty, Liam Rossignol came and coached. Obviously, we've got Steve with the 16s and Crofty with 23. So for John Morling, I think to have you know, Albion players, especially of the caliber of Siddy, Crofty and Rosie, to have them being able to drip some of their experience into our young players, again, invaluable. And because they've played for the Albion, it means even more for us.
Just on that as well, when Sham was obviously saying about my unique role, now I managed to do it. I wouldn't have been able to do it if it weren't for Sham and Sai as well. They made the role become a lot easier for myself. And yeah. Now, like I said, I touched on mine and Sham's chemistry at the start of the podcast. And to sort of touch on Sham's role, there ain't many. I don't think there's one person at the club I know that can coach all 11 players from 1 to 11. And you've seen the work obviously he's done with Rob Sanchez, Cole Rushworth, Tom McGill, Rocco Reese, et cetera, but then to be able to do that level of coaching with outfield players as well, that's very unique. So obviously my role was unique and stuff like that, but to be able to do what Shannon does, again, is something that I don't think if there is anyone out there who does it, I'm not too sure, but you know, it's a massive credit to Shan, and you know, it's to work with Shan every day is a real pleasure, and I feel lucky to be able to do that.
A couple of questions in regards to that, though, Crofty. I mean, does that give you does it give you a unique insight that you wouldn't ordinarily get with being on the pitch, and seeing and how they're communicating together, and also. Is it now you're in the dugout? Is someone else going to come in and fulfil the role that you had?
Yeah, obviously I used to feed back to Shan and Sai about how they were communicating, because sometimes you obviously can't hear what how the boys are communicating on the pitch unless you're on the pitch, and sometimes they'd be like, oh, he's a bit quiet, or he don't. And I'd say no, actually he talks all right, he communicates all right. Maybe he's not the loudest, but actually, his information that he's given on the pitch is pretty good. So I could feed that back and then say, not in training sessions, because I'd always be with the staff as far as getting changed stuff, but actually when playing the games and in the change room at half-time, full-time, seeing how they were acting in the change room was really good insight. And what their feedback to each other was, how demanding they was, if they was digging each other out, but in a respectful way. Were they doing that? Because that's first team football. So getting to grips with that and experiencing that was really good. And then the last part of the question, will someone do what I was doing if obviously it carries on the way it is. I think that the obviously not for me to answer, but I think with how I hope that it, that I did it and the effect that it did, I know they the club were really happy with that. So it's something that they would like to do. I'd say probably yes. You'd have to be at a certain point in your career, maybe a certain person, certain character. I don't think without tapping myself on the back, where I don't think it would be for everyone because it's it is unique, but and it is challenging. But it's something that I've loved, and you know, to have that on my CV is something unique.
Yeah, because Uwe Hoeneme was doing it a little bit just before you arrived, I believe. And but, you know, there's other former Albion luminaries out there who could possibly come in.
We could easily come. I'll tell you what, we could easily come up with a list of half a dozen people, mate.
Corbey, but... Andrea.
Well,
David Lopez.
Andrea's allowed to play anymore, is he? No, but so Shannon, no hankerings or no desires for first team football yourself.
Not right now, no. I've got to say the under 23 age group is a really unique one, but a really rewarding one. You know, I can assure you when the Albion are playing and one of our 23s are on the pitch, me and Crofty are sitting texting, we're on the phone, and we're absolutely delighted to see one of the players that you work with play on the telly. And it's very rewarding in terms of the pride that we have, and you know, at the moment we're developers, and to be able to, you know, help a young player achieve his dream is really, really rewarding. So for me, not right now, and I say with a new challenge with Crofty at the moment, one that you know we're both really, really enjoying. So yeah, we'll just see where we go with that one.
A couple of things before we wrap up here. I mean, Crofty, I've got to ask you about a couple of things. I mentioned earlier, I don't think you answered the question, but it was, I mean, playing with certain players like Vicente, which was just, I mean, absolutely wonderful for us to watch. What was it like to play with that, play with such great repute?
Yeah, unbelievable player, real nice guy. Just a shame that we didn't see him as much as we would like to, because obviously he was coming maybe towards the end and had a few injuries. But when he was fit, the way he moved, the way he handled the ball, the stuff that he see on a football pitch was different to a lot of players, because he just so forward thinking and just could make something happen out of nothing. His disguise, his craft, his creativity was of such a high level. It was when he graced the pitch, he did grace it, and I think obviously everyone was lucky to either play with him or watch him play in an Albion shirt.
Yeah, and obviously quite a few of us are still recovering from losing to Crystal Palace a week or so ago. But let's remind ourselves that you did actually play in the fabulous victory, inspired by Leo Ochoa and David Lopez.
Yeah, some game. Always like the Southampton, always nice to beat your rivals. And if you can do it in style, even better. And that day, yeah, David's free kick was top draw, and the atmosphere that day was absolutely rocking, and they're the ones that the fans don't forget, and the players certainly don't either.
We could certainly deal with a player like Leo Ochoa right now.
So just final, because we've got to wrap up soon, so just final thoughts, gentlemen, to Shannon and to you, Crofty, what's the future look like for you both on a personal thing in the role that you're doing, and For the academy generally, you know, the those on those various pathways on the way to the first team. How, from where you're sitting right here, right now, how's the future looking?
Very excited. Loving, like I said, what Shan said, what we're doing now. Really embracing it, enjoying it, trying to learn as much as you can. Love the responsibility of it, and trying to. Yeah, really teach and educate our young players on what it's about and what it takes. The academy's in a real, real good place, in great hands with obviously the people there, obviously spearheaded by John Morning and Dan Ashworth. The that's in real good hands, and a lot of top coaches, a lot of good people, really, really sort of pushing as hard as they can to get the next crop of players through. So that is a real exciting, with the new training ground getting extended and developed further, it's an unbelievable time to be at the club. From a personal point of view, I'm very ambitious, very driven. Currently on my pro licence, which I'm enjoying, and in no real rush to sort of know what the next bit is, but just wanting to be the best coach, maybe manager one day that I can be, and work at the highest level possible for the longest time possible. So just really excited about this chapter and learning as much as I can. I'm no way near where I want to be, but I am making real big strides, I feel, and hopefully working with people like Shan and a lot of good people, and obviously speaking and watching the first team staff as much as possible. That you can't just rest, and it's all about pushing yourself, and hopefully that will you know, opportunities will keep arising if you're doing the right stuff, which I'm sure they will. So I'm really really enjoying my time at the club.
Shannon?
Yeah, as Crofty said, it's a really exciting time to be a member of staff at our football club, and you know, to be a young player in our academy. You know, we have an aim as a group of staff, you know, an academy aim that John Morlin is really determined to achieve, and you know, that's to have 30% of our first team match day squad to be academy graduates. That's our aim, and you know, for us, that's every member of staff. And I've got to tell you, you know, the amount of staff that we have in the different disciplines, the different areas, is huge. The expertise that's around our young players now, from, you know, psychologists to S&C staff to physios to liaison to the education team, you know, for a young player, they're very well supported. And you know, one of many things that the football club have done is that, you know, they've given, you know, the academy the best possible chance to try and produce young footballers. As Scott said, from our facilities to our staff to our nutrition, you know, for a young player, they have all the things they need to help them get to where they want to be. So for that, you know, that's our aim, more debuts. And can we look, you know, up and down the Football League and say, you know, there's a Brighton young academy graduate, there's another one. So that's probably what we can try and continue and strive to do. And personally, you know, to try and, you know, do the best that me and Crofty can do in this role. You know, I've done under-23 football for 9 years now, and it's an age group that I'm passionate about because of that development factor. And been very lucky to see, you know, a lot of debuts, both at Brighton and previous clubs. So to continue doing that is really important for me.
And a quick word for Simon Rusk.
Yeah, you know, Simon done unbelievable work for us. He's an outstanding coach. You know, someone that I became really close with. And for me, Crofty and Simon's a trio. You know, we really enjoyed our time together. You know, he's had lots of success as an academy member of staff, and of course, I was a first team member of staff. So we wish him all the best in his first managerial job at Stockport. And you know, with the caliber coach that he is, you know, we're confident he'll do well.
And with that, that's pretty much all we've got time for. So thank you to Andrew Cross. Thank you to Shannon Ruth. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Bye. Calling and I feel a pain.
run, 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 run away. I run, 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 run away.